Hello, this is Property Matters, a weekly catch-up on the world of property, supported by Fairview International Property Consultancy and auctionproperty.co.uk. And we're live every Sunday from 10 a.m, YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, and our website, propertymatterstv.co.uk. If you're watching on the website, leave us a Google review. And if you're watching via social media, get involved in the conversation underneath where you're watching us right now. Our email address for suggested discussion topics is hello@propertymatterstv.co.uk. If you don't have time to watch the show in person on a Sunday, you can watch it on the move with a podcast available from the podcast websites that you can see on the far side of the screen. And we're live on Dilsay Radio across the week. So let's look at this week's stories with our property expert, Joe Joshi. Hi, Joe.
Yes, good morning. Good morning to all our viewers and listeners, and a happy Easter Sunday. Long weekend break. It's now used as a massive holiday now, rather than just a religious and other reasons for a break. But yes, welcome to us. We're still here on a Sunday morning.
And of course, if you haven't put your clocks forward, then you will have missed the show, because we're an hour forward to where we would normally be. So we've had 1 hour less sleep. And frankly, it shows on Joe's face today.
Okay, thanks very much for that. Yeah, that's why it's unshaven, you see.
You didn't put your clock forward and you didn't have time for a shave, clearly.
That's right.
All right, yeah. Okay then. So let's look at our first story, which is about MPs launching an inquiry to improve the home buying and selling process. And the story here is about the fact that the Levelling Up Committee, who we've talked about many a time, the Housing and Communities Committee, yesterday launched an inquiry into improving the home buying and selling process in England. This is a cross-party inquiry which will examine the transaction process, information available to buyers, and the role of conveyancers and estate agents. Clive Betts, the chair of the Levelling Up Housing and Communities Committee, said the process of buying and selling a home in England is often stressful for those involved. Indeed, despite there being around 2 million households who successfully buy and sell their properties each year, consumers often find the process is not as efficient, effective, or as consumer-friendly as it could be. As part of this inquiry, we will look at the chief obstacles, he says, to improving the process of buying and selling a home. We'll be keen to examine issues such as the time taken to complete a transaction and the challenges in finding the right information. Topics such as a lack of transparency around conveyancing services, the payment of referral fees, and the weak regulation of estate agents will be on the agenda on the inquiry. The committee will welcome written evidence on the terms of reference, which we'll go over in a second, and the closing date is the 18th of April, with sessions held in late April. So the question, I suppose, is, Joe, it's probably not before time that this is actually finally being looked at, because we've discussed this over the last 3 years.
Yes, a very interesting subject. And again, it is not before time, Paul, but more than anything else, look at the time span it's given, 18th of April. I mean, it hasn't given a great deal of time for a very important issue, for time for discussion or for some sort of lead up to what could be a changing process. In the conveyancing or in the home buying process in general. So whilst, you know, it's good that they brought it to the front there, it doesn't seem like they've given it, as always, a lot of credibility to it by not giving it enough time and getting involved, perhaps people that really do matter in this kind of industry and getting their view. So it'll be a short, sharp tick box exercise and probably won't really get to the heart of the matter, which I think is very, very crucial.
Well, the committee will be made up of professionals and obviously people that sit on the committee from a government perspective, but they will be holding their sessions in late April. They haven't put a timescale on that. But what is surprising is that the date for entries to be in is as soon as the 18th of April. They haven't given a lot of time for people to get their messages in. But I suppose they might be thinking that if you're really passionate about the changes that are needed in this process, then you would pick up pen and paper and or tap your keyboard to the point where you get things in as quickly as possible.
Yes, yeah, there's no No question about it. And of course, it'll be the usual culprits that will come in and forward, probably talk the talk, but actually don't walk the walk. I shall certainly put my keyboard to action on it and see if they are interested in taking me on board. And they probably wouldn't want me on board as quickly as they would like perhaps some of the yes people that they'll get on it. But I'd be delighted to be on the board, to be able to give my 40 odd years worth of experience on how this can actually change in real time. But people like me probably are not the flavor. They'll probably get the, as I said, the yes boys and the boys in the club that will come along and just talk the talk, but actually probably won't end up delivering what is really necessary here.
Well, some of the things that they want answered and the questions they'd like addressed, so we can help you with what you're going to type. So the questions are, for example, how efficient or effective is the existing process of buying and selling homes? And how could this be improved? There's a $64,000 question.
Well, really, if you look at that as a question, I mean, it is probably the most bizarre question to ask. The whole idea of this is to discuss the process. So we already know what that question should be, but it's a time filler, and they'll just talk about it, go around in circles and spend a lot of man hours and probably come back to the same solution. But yes, there are many, many areas that this can be improved in. We've covered it in our own way on our shows, and I certainly feel quite passionate about that, the time it takes and the costs that are involved. And over the last several months, we've seen, you know, figures being thrown, bantered out, how many fall-throughs happen, why, how much money is spent on the fall-throughs, how much, you know, heartache it causes a lot of people about the money that it's cost and all the discomfort that is involved, the stress that's involved in the whole process is quite a lot, considering there's 2 million people successfully move, yet they could probably make that to 4 million people if they actually improve the system a lot.
They say here, is the reliance on voluntary initiatives adequate to improve the buying and selling process, or should improvements be made mandatory through legislation? Are they talking about, do you think, the initiatives to sort of put up front some of the details that might be in the detail when the conveyancing process starts? Is that what they're talking about? Because I'm not entirely sure what they mean by voluntary initiatives adequate.
Yes, so this goes back to that age-old thing called HIPs that they brought out at one time. And the idea was that it's a home information pack that each seller would actually turn around and voluntarily give all the information, you know, almost under oath, to say that, you know, what they're provided is the truth and nothing but the truth. But the reality of that is that that's not how people perceive it. And also, it all depends. But so making it law is not necessarily going to be maybe a prolonged thing. 5 years from now, we might get to the actual law. Don't forget, you know, in 24, they may be a change of government, and the next tribe will have a completely different view of the process, and that may, you know, knock this whole idea into the long grass and find that, you know, we're not actually going to spend any time on it, because the idea would be they got other more important things that they need to do, they feel that they need to do. So, but the idea behind this is that, yes, you know, individuals would give willingly the true information about a property that they are selling, and that the solicitors, the conveyancers, then will spend less time in trying to ascertain the truth. But the problem with that is, and here is the legal side of it, the problem is that it is open to scrutiny. So let's say, hypothetically, you turn around and you're selling your property and you say, right, this is the problem, this is the thing, you know, I had an extension, I've got this, I've got that, I've got all these things that you need, but I didn't get around to doing the building regs. And so you'll have to apply for those in retrospect, but it's been over 5 years and I think you'll get it. And you know, and all those other things that people get up to in their properties, and they feel that, you know, they can maybe go and ask for it afterwards. I've done it now, it's too late. And so that then means that anyone that's doing conveyancing is still going to ask the question. So it's good to offer it out, but the reality is that it's not going to speed up the process at all, because the solicitors or the conveyancer will then go back to asking all the questions, the relevant questions, and asking for people to tell the truth or provide the documentation. And if they haven't done the right thing, they're not going to be able to provide the documentation. And if they're not able to provide the documentation, we're back to square one. So there has to be, you know, a certain level of documents that, and this was the downfall of the HIPS pool. The home information pack was the same thing. The idea was, again, let's provide everything up front, give you a whole file. A customer would come into your office to buy that property, and you slam a home information pack with a full dossier of all the information in front of them. 99% of them never looked at it. Nobody actually really bothered to take it any further. And so it was a complete waste of time. So the question is, do you make it law? Well, if you make it law, at what point does somebody break the law? And what is ambiguous about the law? What is their belief of what is right? And what the lawyer's belief is what is right? And perhaps the other people that are in the game, which we haven't even discussed. So we're talking about buyers, sellers, and maybe lawyers. But the conveyancing also has to be done on behalf of the lenders, the financial institutions, the surveyors, and the list goes on for all the other people that get involved. And each one will have an opinion on that point. You can then spend the next 6 months arguing about those opinions. So I'm not so sure it's actually going to speed up the process.
They're talking about the transaction process. Some of the questions they want to ask about is, what is the impact of the issues on the transaction process, such as gazumping and gazundering? Could they be remedied somehow? Would the greater use of reservation agreements improve the transaction process? And what prevents reservation agreements being more widely used? Why has a short standardised reservation agreement not been developed as promised by the then government in 2018? So looking at reservation agreements, as I've done, these are often used with the purchase of new build properties, of course, and I've been through one of those myself. You see the plot of land, they show you the house they're going to build in a picture, and then you wait for it to be built, but you've signed and committed to it in advance of it being built. But I didn't realise that they are available for existing houses and through your estate agent. In other words, you sign an agreement, a bit like you've suggested in the past, Joe, that if you sign an agreement to buy a house, it should be legally binding, and therefore you've got skin in the game, as you've said before. But I didn't realise they were available for existing properties. And maybe that's something that could be more widely used to stop things falling through.
They are available and they have been available, but unfortunately they don't hold any water. That's the problem. Whereas in the new home section, they've held water. So if you've actually gone and paid a deposit on a property and you then back out, then you lose that deposit. But unfortunately in the secondhand market, which is quite the much stronger market, they haven't actually done that. And that's where I have suggested many times that they should make it mandatory that both buyer and seller will have to put some skin in the game. And the one that decides that they either can't provide the appropriate information has to compensate the other because they wasted time on it, and or the one that decides to change his mind and say, I found something else, has to compensate the seller to say, well, I held my property off the market because of you, and therefore I may have lost buyers. So that just doesn't exist. And I think that will sort out a lot of these problems that they talk about. It's actually a lesser thing to do for the bigger. I mean, what they're trying to do here, from what I can see, is the old adage of a sledgehammer to break a nut. But the reality is, if they had an agreement structured that allows that the minute somebody says, I want to make an offer, and that offer is acceptable, they have got to put that money in. Now, if you take that to the letting side of things, that's what happens. If now a letting is agreed and they paid a small holding deposit and they back out, well, they lose that deposit. Secondly, the deposit that is held, i.e. from a lettings point of view, that can go into some sort of government scheme or some sort of insurance, which allows them to say, okay, well, you know, that's a bond, and therefore, if at the end of my tenancy agreement, the property isn't left in the state it is, I can claim that bond of whatever might the rent might be, five weeks worth of deposit or something like that. So, you know, they've got it on that side, but they haven't got it on the secondhand sales side. And I think it's high time that something like that did happen. I mean, you know, in the grand scheme, Paul, when you look at the value of the home, and you start to say to yourself, the average house, and we've discussed that a million times, the average house is now what, 300,000 odd pound. And you know, if somebody's really serious about what they want to do, then not just 500, but £1,000 of a deposit does create a little bit of pain. And so they will think very seriously about whether they want to commit to that purchase by putting £1,000 that would be non-refundable upon the fact that they changed their mind or they couldn't get their finances. So it makes them think twice about whether they want to buy the property, whether they want to commit to it, and whether they put some sort of deposit down. That would save a lot of time wasting, both on the legal side and from the owners of the property, and of course the buyers. Because if the seller decides that, you know what, I want to keep my options open, I know, you know, this offer is acceptable, but I've only been on the market 5 days, I want to give it a bit longer, that takes away this gazundering and gazumping situation. Because at the end of the day, if they've deposited, you know, £1,000, which is a reasonable amount of money as skin in the game, you know, the other side's going to get it. So if a seller then finds that they've got a higher offer from another party, you know, 5, 6, 7, 10 days after it's been on the market, though they had accepted an offer from somebody within the first couple of days, well, they'll lose that money and they'll have to probably get the next buyer to compensate for it. And sooner or later, buyers and sellers will come to a point where they'll just say, you know what, I can't afford to keep losing £1,000 here and there. I've got to make this decision and I've got to stick with it. And that's what will happen. And that will sort out a large number of these issues that they have. Even in terms of the conveyancer, you know, the conveyancer would have been a bit more assured of that transaction and may actually take their finger out and do the transaction much quicker, because they know that this is serious, that someone has actually parted with some money to get on with the job. Unfortunately, no sale, no fee, no commitment, no skin in the game means 50% or more fall throughs. And that's the problem.
Surely there'd have to be a dramatic change in the way this whole system works, because you couldn't have a reservation agreement that is in place before you understand the full legal implications of what that property entails. In other words, situations like, for example, you find years down the, or months down the line, that there's a shared drive that you didn't know anything about, or there's some kind of covenant on the property you didn't know about. So there'd have to be full disclosure in advance of a reservation agreement, surely.
Yes, when I say a reservation fee or a holding deposit, to actually get into the game, you need to put that down. Obviously, there can be some caveats on that, and some of those caveats could be things like the honesty and the disclosure of certain things that may or may not allow them to do that. But the sheer fact that you've got to start the game with some, you know, put your hand in your pocket and put some money on the table is a huge challenge in itself, a huge fight. It's far cry. People don't do it. So let's look at the system, you know, in the basics. You and I, I'm a seller, you're a buyer. And basically, you come along and agree to sell with me. And I've said to you, yeah, that's no problem, all done and dusted. We shook hands and walked into the sunset. And then somebody else comes along and says to me, I actually offer you £5,000 more. I'm probably not even going to call you. I'm going to get now the third person in the game to call you to give you the bad news, because I shook hands with you. It means nothing now, because, you know, I don't want to upset you, Paul. So what I'll do is I'll just tell the agent to tell you that you've had, there's a higher offer. You're going to then say, well, actually, I spoke to Joe and we agreed term. We shook hands. That was that. Why is he doing that? That's because neither of us have any skin in the game. Now, if you said to me, Joe, I want to buy this property, let's say agree a price, and I'll lodge £1,000 with the agent, or however that works, which is a non-refundable, subject to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 points that we agree. And I'll say, that's fine. I'll also lodge £1,000 on the basis that I'll provide all of that information to the best of my ability and knowledge. And of course, you know, and hey presto, now we have a relationship that is serious. Unfortunately, the old adage of my word is my bond is actually means nothing now. It's only money talks and the rest of it walks, as we know. And so therefore, you know, that's how it would have to really progress. That's when I say that they've got to put something into it. You can put conditions on that. I'm not saying that, you know, it's got to unconditionally, but you've got to have a start somewhere. And I think by knowing that you've actually parted, now way back, we're talking about like, you know, nearly 40 years ago, people used to give us deposit. They would give us a like a £250 holding deposit, which was held. And funny enough, the sales fall through was lesser because people felt that they've actually given a deposit and they was too embarrassed to come back and say, well, can I have my 250 quid back on the basis that I don't want to buy this anymore? Unless there was a plausible reason. Now, those plausible reasons could be things like, you know, I've checked my mortgage position and I'm not in a position to get a mortgage. I thought I was. Or, you know, something serious has happened within their family circumstance that has not allowed them to continue this. There was always something there that allowed that to happen. I believe that that is really the way it should be considered going forward.
And I guess there would have to be full disclosure up front. And actually, what you're saying there, in fact, really, the point I was going to make, actually, just thought of while you were talking there, was the fact that that would get rid of the gazumping and the gazundering. But unless you had that full disclosure in advance, that wouldn't really still stop the fall-throughs, because if there was a caveat in that deposit process, the reservation agreement, if there was a caveat that this is subject to everything being as you've said it is, and then it turns out not to be, it would still fall through.
Well, much lesser fall-throughs. Of course, there would be fall-throughs, but they wouldn't be as high as they are, because there is a level of integrity that's been added by putting some money down on the table. So yes, there's not, you know, you're not going to get 100% fall-throughs reduced, but you're going to certainly reduce them a lot. Because at the moment, what happens is it's just easy, isn't it? I want to buy that house. Okay, I made an offer. Here's my solicitor, and that's it. Nothing else happens. There's no commitment. So they go to the sunset, you know, go on holiday, have a fallout, come back and go, now we're not going to buy it. In the meantime, whilst they've had a nice holiday, the seller thinks they've got a sale. They progress up the chain on the basis of saying, well, I've got a buyer on my property. They're a lovely first-time buyer couple. They made an offer. It's all in the hands of the solicitors. Don't mean nothing. It's just a memorandum that's gone to a solicitor to say, here's a buyer and here's a seller. The seller then goes up the line and says to somebody else, well, actually, I've got a buyer on my property, so I'll buy yours. He's then made another commitment to somebody else, and it goes on. That's the chain reaction. And they find that all of a sudden, right at the bottom, they come back and from their holiday and go, actually, we've had time to think about it. While sitting on the sun, in the sun on the beach, we decided that, you know what, we'd rather buy a place in Spain and not live in the UK. But the whole chain collapses, right? And a new buyer has to be found. What I'm saying is that if there was no level of integrity commitment, there will be a time that in that same conversation, one could be sitting on the beach and going, well, actually, you know, we parted with £1,000. We got to give them a reason why we want to change our mind. That was not one of the conditions. The conditions were related to the property, not to the fact that we're sitting on the beach, decided that we want to now live in Spain. So we're going to lose £1,000. What I'm saying is there's got to be something that's tangible that's going to make them stop and think, well, do I want to do that? Or is it just something that we're doing emotionally right now because it's kind of fun in the sun? So, you know, and people do that a lot. I mean, over the years, I've seen loads of people that's just saying, yeah, you know, I looked at it, I found something else, got a bigger garden, or it's got something else. And so those are the basics that create the problem in the chain reaction. And the chain reaction isn't from A to B, it's A to Z. It's probably five people in the chain that now are going to be all disappointed. And all the solicitors in that chain are going to say, well, we can't take this in further. And all the buyers are going to say, and then it's going to be somebody who's going to do it. Now, the other part of this is that any buyers, whether it's first time buyer, second or third or fourth time buyers, whatever they are probably going to get some sort of funding somewhere. It might be the person at the end is a cash buyer, but someone's going to have some funding. Then they've got to part with surveying costs. And that in itself is another huge amount of fees. So there's a reservation fee for holding a mortgage nowadays. You know, so if you've done a deal and you've decided to hold a 3-year or 5-year fixed rate, they're going to say, we're going to hold that for you. We're going to hold that balance for you. And that's going to cost you, you know, I don't know, £600 or whatever. And then there's a percentage towards the cost of that. Then there's a survey cost. You've got to go and spend the surveyor. The surveyor's going to go out and do the valuation. The minute he's gone out and done the valuation, that money's gone. Whether it's valued up or you've got the money or not, that money. So there's a lot of money that just loses. But at the beginning, if it was set up in such a way that somebody had, as I call it, skin in the game, money on the table, some basic conditions of what you can and what you can't get out of the situation, we will reduce the amount of fall throughs that happen. We may not eradicate them all. We will certainly make a question on gazundering and gazumping, because people will think twice about thinking that I want to do that. And also, it means that if they are committing to a survey or evaluation, all of a sudden, we're going to speed up the process a lot, Paul, which is a huge thing, which is one of the questions raised here, that if everybody is in it to win it, then the process will win. But if they're all just going, oh, well, I made an offer, you go down the pub and tell your mates, yeah, we bought a house last night, it's great, got 3 bedrooms, 2 reception rooms, you know, it's in the hands of solicitors now, let's have a drink, celebrate. Have a drink and celebrate, but it doesn't mean you bought it. You haven't parted with anything. And that is, you know, the problem. Now, there's two parts of that problem. One is obviously the system. And secondly, it's the people that are involved in it. Agents per se are not agents as we used to be, or they used to be, like people like me. They are now mostly letting agents who, so the system has reversed. In the early days, it was sales that mattered and lettings became a second sort of a relative, second relation. It was a second thing to your business. Now, most people are letting agents and they're not selling agents, because selling has become a second part of the business and the lettings has become. So it doesn't have the same credence, the same understanding. And so people don't actually do a great deal towards the actual sales side of things. And that stops people actually taking the matter seriously and understanding the implications. And that's where agents will just say, well, I've done that deal, I've stuck an offer together, the memorandum of sale's gone out, it's now in the hand of the solicitor, I don't want to know anymore, that's it, it's gone. And then it falls through and then they get, oh my God, it's fallen through. So they don't follow the process because it's not a process that is going to pay them now. Whereas the letting business is going to pay them now. So their process and their priorities have changed. And so a sale will be 3 months down the road, potentially a good fee, but nothing of nothing is nothing.
Yeah, and of course, the lettings business has an incremental revenue, doesn't it? Every month, it's money coming in on the monthly basis. You're not reliant on getting new properties on every month. They're talking about the information provision in these terms of reference here. So they're saying, you know, do buyers have the right information available at the right time during transactions? Well, clearly that's a no at the moment because we've just discussed that very point. And what effect would it have on the transaction process if sellers were required to provide set information about a property when it was marketed? And I think that's the thing, isn't it, really? And that ties into the next point that they talk about and I wanted to discuss is that they're asking about what further information in the house buying process still needs to be digitized and how can that process be accelerated or prioritized? Because it is amazing that where properties have been changing hands over the last 10, 15, 20 years, that these bits of information, you know, talk about the shared drive that no one knew about, that information has been found from old records, of course, which probably were in a real paper form at one point. But the fact that that house has changed hands twice in the last 20 years means that that information is known and should be by now, surely, as everything else in life is now, in a digitised record somewhere and should be available easily to anyone thinking of buying a property.
I think that could be quite easy. Yeah, I think that could be quite easily answerable. I mean, one thing that the Land Registry have done extremely well over the last 15, 20 years is actually digitised the idea of a land registry document, number one. Number two, most lenders back in the days, yeah, that's where the grey beard comes from, Paul. Back in the days, we used to be having to sort of write off So this was the process. Let me just give you the basics of the process as it was, so that you can all understand what was going wrong and what wasn't going wrong. So in the old days, just take the Halifax as an example, the Halifax will lend you money, and in their archives, in some office somewhere in Halifax, they had these rolls of deeds that said that that was the deed of the property that they have lent on. So they held the deeds. So what used to happen is, if you decided to sell the property, we would have to then go and write, the solicitor would have to write to the Halifax and say, can you please send me the copy of the deeds, or the deed, the original deed, which will be mailed to them or sent by whatever courier under security, because that deed was the ultimate document that gave all the information that was available about that particular property, of that conveyance, when it was bought, built, designed, whatever ever happened to it at that time. They would then draft a sales contract based on that deed. So just look at the process. Let's take month January the 2nd, because January the 1st we were off. January the 2nd, the solicitor is instructed to write to the building society to request the deed. And that deed would have taken probably anything between 2 and 4 weeks to arrive from head office of the Halifax under security. The solicitor will then spend the next 2 to 3 weeks dissecting that particular set of deeds in order to make sure that they drafted up the so-called contract of sale in line with what they were selling in that deed. That then would go to the buyer solicitor. The buyer solicitor will then spend the next 4 to 6 weeks questioning those deeds and the covenants that contained therein of those deeds, and whether they had the chance of jumping over the fence. For example, if you look at the house, is the fence on the left hand belongs to the new owner, or is it the right one? And there's a house at the back whose garden fence. Who owns the garden fence at the back? Is it me, the seller, or we have a joint thing? And you could spend the next 6-8 weeks faffing around about who owned and was responsible for the garden fence. I mean, that is what the process, that's what used to take all of the time. Eventually you get to the point where you get the answers back and the buyer says, I'm not really happy with that. Why is that? Well, I was told the fence on the left hand was mine, but not the right one on the right. The right hand fence causes me a problem because I want to do an extension, which is going to be on the right hand side, which is going to cause me a third party wall dispute with a neighbor. I don't want to do that. His wall is over my side, and it goes on and on and on. That's what takes the time. Now, I believe that you could very easily have had contained all of that information that was done at the outside originally and kept on, and updated the land registry documents as you go on. So that when somebody now, in today's world, you can get the land registry document digital, you can go online and you can download the land registry document for that particular property to show, you know, when they bought it, what covenants are on there, you know, how long the lease is, all that kind of stuff. And there's nothing stopping them adding the basics of all of those questions of conveyancing in its history to that, so that a solicitor can download it and say immediately, I've got the document in front of me from the land registry. Yes, it shows you the left-hand fence is yours. It shows us that the back fence is shared with the right people. The one on the right hand belongs to the neighbor next door. You know, you've got right of way on the front. There is a shared drive. I've seen the plans for the shared drive. All of that can be digitized and put back in. It can be shortened. But of course, you know, it's like everything in the modern world, Paul. People will lose jobs. There will be somebody who can't pen, you know, push the pen around to do that. And someone's got to upload that information. But I don't think if land registry can successfully upload majority of its deeds and its conveyances, and most lenders now have their deeds digitized, then I don't think it's out of the realms of achievement.
Sure. Last point on this, Joe, our last one for today in terms of this particular story. Should there be a code of practice that's legally enforceable for estate agents? One of the questions that they've got in this terms of reference.
To a large extent, yes, there should be, but there already has been some code of practice for this, and that was brought in by the Property Misdescription Act, on the basis that if somebody was misdescribing a property, that the agent could be held to some sort of order on that. And the only get out in that, if there is that information is only as good as supplied by the seller of their client. So agents probably get a little bit laxy-daisy, and sellers do. And if they were probably to police that a little bit more tightly, then, you know, we've all now got to a point where we get an authority to sign by the seller to say, can you confirm that what I have written about your property is correct to the best of your knowledge? And obviously we're not misleading somebody anywhere. But as time has gone on, a bit like the hips went down, was flushed down the toilet. Same thing as these things, you just get relaxed about it. But yes, if there was some form of, policing or some sort of scrutiny, then I don't think it would be missed. I think it'd be a good thing. But I think it's, to a large extent, it does exist already. It's just that people just get a bit lazy.
Well, I kind of knew that this story was going to be quite a biggie this week. And in fact, it's taken up the whole show for us today. So, but that's no bad thing. It's been an interesting debate on the sales process and the buying process as well, of course. So that wraps it up for this week. We did have other stories, but they'll have to wait till next week. We'll tempt you with those next time on Property Matters.